content presented on the following show by any host or by any guest should be used solely for your entertainment and enjoyment. The views and opinions of the following show are not necessarily those of the Whole Care Network, other show hosts on the Whole Care Network, or advertisers on the Whole Care Network. Shows on the Whole Care Network are not intended to treat, diagnose, or claim to cure any disease or condition. Always consult a professional when making any changes to your physical, spiritual, mental, or financial health. And thank you for listening to the Whole Care Network.
How do you want to be cared for as you age? By planning now, successful aging is in your control. Welcome to Your Future Self. Featured on the Whole Care Network, On Your Future Self, we share real-life stories and trusted resources to help you plan for your care. And now, here are your hosts, Monica Stanchula and Christopher McLellan. Well, greetings, Monica. We're back for our third pillar of care, On Your Future Self.
Yes. Good to be back, Chris. I'm looking forward to today's discussion. Such an important one. I can't wait.
It is, but you know, I'm still recovering from the last discussion because you took the lead in the podcast. I'm thinking I'm going to be replaced.
No worries there, buddy. No worries.
No worries, really. But no, it was a terrific conversation, and we're going to have an even better one today as we're talking about the financial pillar. And there's all four pillars are important. Financial pillar really hits home for me because I know firsthand how much caregiving impacted me financially. And as we project about our future self and what we can and cannot control, finances is a really big part of it. And we've got two special guests to kind of help us along the way here. Would you like to introduce them?
I would love to introduce them. You know, I think the thing about talking about legal and financial issues is it does take an expert to really set you on the right track. And we have two experts here today that I am so excited to have with us. We have Amanda Singleton. Amanda Singleton is the principal at the Singleton Law Firm. Did I say that right?
Singleton Legal.
Singleton
Law Firm was taken.
Oh, okay. All right. Amanda Singleton is the principal at Singleton Legal here in St. Petersburg, Florida. And Amanda is also an AARP expert talking about legal issues. Amanda is an elder law attorney. She's amazing. We've had her present, Chris. We've had her present at the Caregiver Accelerator annual convention. And I'll tell you what, she energized the crowd so much because her story is compelling and she takes all of the fear out of talking about these issues. She's just amazing. So I can't thank you enough, Amanda, for joining us today. I'm so pleased you're here.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Chris and Monica. And it's just wonderful to be in this space doing another podcast with you a few years later. I think you're both pretty irreplaceable. And that was such a wonderful intro. I'm delighted to be here today.
And along with Amanda, we also have Ryan Singleton. I'm sure there's no nepotism here. It has nothing to do with that. Ryan is bankruptcy attorney. Is that the proper way to say it, Ryan?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. You can say that, our consumer attorney, because sometimes we do other things like creditor harassment or debt settlement or other things like that. But yeah, it's a pleasure to be here with you today, Chris and Monica. Thank you so much for having us on.
And I know Ryan and Amanda are going to appreciate this when I say all the information that we share on today's podcast is for informational purposes only.
That's right. Everyone's circumstances are different. And I have to say, fun fact, no nepotism here. Ryan and I aren't related at all. so that's not true.
Not by blood.
Ryan is my love and life partner. We started dating our first semester of law school at Stetson University in Florida. And then we became a couple, became married, and it was such a pleasure to have him come over and join the firm as my co-owner back in 2019. And it is true that our lives have been so personally marked by caregiving, but every day in our individual practices, we deal with what happens when the financial floor falls out on people. And so we try to help them early before they get to that point of coming through our door with a major problem.
And Amanda, and I'm likewise thrilled that the two of you are together, because there's no way to separate the legal and the financial. I mean, they're so intertwined that unless they work in concert, I mean, we're not going to get a good result. You can give the best legal advice, but if the money doesn't follow it correctly and vice versa, I mean, you're still going to be kind of struggling.
That's right. That's why it's really a team that does all of this, which we've talked about at Caregiver Accelerator events and AARP things in the past and on our podcast, Monica and Chris, a couple of years ago, that you really need a whole cohort of people to assist you with these really important life issues. It's not just the attorneys. It's your financial advisor. It's insurance professionals. It's trusted people. It's caregiver advocates. And it's other caregivers, people who have done this. And they can tell you what's happening down the road before you may even perceive it. So it's the important thing, you know, we're all part of a big team to support each other through these realistic things that happen in life for basically all of us.
Wonderful. That's a great segue to jump us into our conversation. Yeah, you're perfect there, Amanda. So we are really talking about protecting ourselves and protecting our future once caregiving is done. And I think we all feel the risk of when you're in the trenches, it's all about the battle. But when the war is over and the dust settles, there's a lot of reckoning to happen. Let's talk about that. How do you, when a new client comes to you, a caregiver comes to you, what do you think? What's the first steps they need to do? How do they get started on trying to tackle these legal and financial issues?
Getting organized is critical. Hopefully, we have people come see us when they're expectant caregivers, not when they are already in the throes of caregiving, because that planning can make such a big difference. And I'll pass the ball to Ryan on this point, but I think the first thing, and it's so simple, is just pulling a form online, like the AARP Prepare to Care Guide is a great one because it covers a variety of topics, including the legal and financial, but just having an inventory of assets and liabilities, knowing where you stand. And Ryan will touch on creating a budget, you know, making sure that you are living your life in a way that is functional for you now, but it's also planning for what's happening 5-10 years down the road, 20, if possible. So I'll pass the ball to Ryan now.
Well, when it comes to the financial aspect of planning, financially speaking, I think that the best thing people can do is create a budget. That's something you should do anyway, whether or not you're a caregiver. A lot of people don't have an inclination to do that, of course. Amanda, we probably went maybe 10 years or so being together until our financial planner made us make a budget.
He made us. but it was after caregiving. You know, we were cruising along just fine, you know, prior to the caregiving years. And then that's when all that unexpected expense. And I'll give a shout out to our financial advisor, Chuck, gave us a binder and he said, you have to do this. And we did. And there's transparency and clarity since then in where we stand with our finances. But go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's exactly what it is. It gives you clarity, gives you transparency with respect to your finances. It's the best way to judge your financial health and evaluate what changes need to happen. So it gives you the ability to set savings goals and spending boundaries. So it's a really important thing to do, especially for caregivers, as caregivers can expect to spend nearly 20% of their personal income on out-of-pocket costs related to caring for their loved ones. So, you know, the best way to account for that extra expense is the budget form. We are going to be providing some links to a blog on our website, which we're going to share with you. On one of those links is going to be a blank budget that people can fill in through consumer.gov. Yeah.
Right.
And it does all the math for you. So you don't have to worry about that. You just plug in, you know, the best numbers that you can find. you know, you can start by estimating, but then you can also maybe pull the last few months' bank statements to verify what your expenses are, so you don't have to solely rely on memory. And once you do that, once you prepare your budget, once you find that, if you find that you're spending equal to or more than your income, something needs to change. You should always try to set your budget to leave a little buffer, leave a little wiggle room to account for unexpected expenses.
Ryan, can I stop you there? I got a question.
Sure.
Okay, so you're taking care of a loved one. And let's say typically that loved one is living on a fixed income, whether it be disability or Social Security or something else. So they have a fixed income. You figure out what expenses you're paying. Then there's a hospitalization, and all of a sudden you have this giant copay and deductible you weren't anticipating. What is your take on, do you bleed over into your own personal budget, or do you go out looking for help at that point? How do you keep it separated between what is happening with the person you're caring for and what you as a caregiver should cover as a? Is there a difference between the two?
There is, and that's a very good question, Monica. It touches on an important point with respect to liability for medical bills. The caregiver, you are not financially liable for your loved one's medical expenses unless you sign something that says that you are. So you have to be very careful of what you're signing at certain places. You definitely want to review those forms and make sure that there's not going to be any personal liability associated with it.
When would that happen, Ryan? When do you need to look out for that?
What
upon
form is that, Amanda?
Right?
Do you know, remember what that is, the form that they try to squeeze that into? I have it here. I just need to look it up.
So it's part of the admission process.
Certain admissions forms. They're not here in Florida where we reside, but one of the attorneys in the Academy of Elder Law Attorneys said they saw a form from a California facility that snuck it into a healthcare directive.
That was a healthcare surrogate.
Whoa. And that'll be litigated, I'm so sure. But, you know, a lot of people don't know this. I didn't know this when my mom wanted to go into skilled nursing to learn how to walk again. And she was hell-bent on it. And I didn't want her to do that, but it's her life, it's her body. You know, she was the determiner of what was going to happen. But I was the person who was signing things. And so when that $7,000 a month private pay bill needed to be paid, that was also something that I was on the hook for. So it's important to distinguish what you're liable for and what you're not liable for. And we'll touch on this later, I'm sure. But if you're somebody's power of attorney and you're using that document, that's wonderful. You can use that. You can sign things for people if they're admitted, getting admitted, and they're not in a place where they can do these things for themselves. Just make sure that you're covering your bases and you sign as their power of attorney, as their agent. And then that creates this dividing line between you being personally responsible for a bill and not. So the important thing for, I think, caregivers to know is if your name isn't on it, it's not your responsibility. So don't sink your ship trying to pay somebody else's debts.
Amanda, that is great. That is incredible advice right there. You know, as a longtime hospital social worker, when a family brings a person in, they're just worried about that person getting the very best care. And all the focus is on the person that's sick. And my concern is, and the two of this space the best, is you have to protect yourself as well in that moment. And it's getting that mindset that, oh, wait a second, I'm going to do right by my loved one, but I also have to do right by myself at the same time. So thank you for putting the budget up and making it clear about when it is your responsibility and when it is not, and how to properly sign for that. I think that is a huge issue when it comes to caregiving in many ways. But Ryan, back to, I want to finish this conversation about setting up that budget and knowing what's theirs and what's yours. So I can see very quickly when someone's living on a fixed income, you're going to hit the ceiling on what expenses can be covered. Do you recommend people then go and start to reach out for government-funded programs, needs-based funded programs at that point? Or should they cover the expenses and say, I'll get to that later?
I mean, it's always best to find whatever resources are available if you can, if you have the time. I understand caregiving, it stretches people's time, and that's understandable. But benefits.gov is a place to start. The 211 program by the United Way has resources to various things like food banks that people can go to help, you know, at least get their food needs met, get rental or utility assistance. So I would definitely explore those two main programs and the other local ones you can find before you start sinking in your own money into someone else's budget.
Right. If I may, that's what they're there for. And a quarter of caregivers have a hard time finding affordable services. So look early, look often, and take advantage of what's available. We're on this unbelievable ride of a year in which a lot of people have had their financial security ripped out from under them. And a lot of resources are strained. So the sooner you can explore these things, the better. Elder law attorneys can help that, caregiver advocates, care managers, all of these folks can. So you're not starting from scratch, because the hardest thing, I think, is when you go, okay, we need help. What's out there? And it's difficult to navigate everything that's available in your area. And sometimes the services aren't available to you for one reason or another. So rely on other people to help get you pointed on the road that's going to help you. And also, because there are a lot of pandemic-related assistance programs that I think Ryan can elaborate on better than I could, happening right now, explore those too. They're here for us to utilize. They're a piece of, if you are caregiving and these things are happening in your life in parallel to this pandemic, there's more out there even now than there was with regard to your retirement accounts and mortgages and so on. So those are a big piece too.
Right. But that underscores, Amanda, just what you're saying, that underscores why it's important to be organized to begin with, because you're never going to get through these application process if you're not organized to begin with. So it takes us back to where we started on this conversation. If you're organized, documents are together, that's the best place to set your foundation to make this work, right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
100%.
Ryan, besides the budget, what else do you recommend that caregivers should be doing to make sure they're protecting themselves while they're taking care of someone else?
Beyond the budget, I mean, it's just about trying to make ends meet, right? So you're trying to, financially speaking, you're trying to cover your expenses, supplement your income if you can. By that, I mean, if you need to, you can liquidate assets, you can sell things. Typically speaking, as a bankruptcy attorney, the general advice that I would give to people when it comes to selling or liquidating their own assets is to not liquidate assets that are protected from your creditors. Such as in Florida, you know, the equity in your house is protected, your retirement accounts are protected. So if you do end up hitting financial rock bottom and you do need to file a bankruptcy, you can file a bankruptcy, eliminate your debts, and still retain those assets, retain the equity in your homestead, retain the full balance of your retirement accounts so that you preserve those assets for your future. The one kind of caveat that I would throw on that advice is if I would still say tap other resources first, but if you need to tap your retirement accounts, this is the year to do it because of the CARES Act, the relief that they've given on that. Mm-hmm. They've eliminated the 10% penalty on early withdrawals. There are certain requirements. You have to have, it has to be COVID related type of reason. Either you've been diagnosed, have a spouse or dependent that's been diagnosed or experienced a layoff or furlough or inability to work or childcare issues due to COVID. But you can take out up to $100,000 per person and not only not have to pay that 10% penalty, but the 20% withholding, you can skip that for now. It will come due eventually, but if you're they have, and not necessarily within this tax year, they're giving people up to 3 years to pay that withholding tax on their retirement, so they can skip the withholding, the 20% withholding, and pay that over the course of the next 3 years. You just, it's important to plan and be organized and not forget about that. Otherwise, you're setting yourself up for a financial landmine down in the future.
That's great advice. That's great advice. You know, after doing conversations for AARP all those years, it frightened me when I heard caregivers say, I'll make it up later. I'll take it out now and I'll make it up later. You know,
doesn't happen.
No,
absolutely. So, Chris, can you talk to that point?
I've really enjoyed listening, as I'm sure all of our listeners are, well, because I'm able to put myself in the position of, in this conversation, of what it was like while I was in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And one of the important points that comes out of all this is caregivers are often in the position to make these important decisions when they're in an emotional setting. And what happens when we make decisions when we're emotional? Like, for instance, we were, when Amanda was talking about signing the documents at the hospital. Well, I'm willing to sign anything without reading it, knowing that I can get the help for the person that I'm caring for.
And always then after, read documents.
It's like what did I sign?
Yes, right.
And you know, we all know that happens because we're so emotional at these times that you're willing to do just about anything to get the person that entrusted in your care the help that they need. And that's why in planning for your future self, we want to be able to use these stories in a way that helps people understand that not only are you not alone in this, but we can help you with some of these plans just by talking and listening to the right people. And we've got them right here on the show.
Hey, Chris, I think this would be a good point for us to take a break and let our minds shake out a little bit, because that's a lot to take in right there. How about
you? Let's take our break here. You're listening to Your Future Self on the Whole Care Network, and we'll be right back. Hey, it's Christopher McClellan from the Whole Care Network. I hope you're enjoying this episode of Your Future Self. And to learn more about our four pillars of care, visit us online at thewholecarenetwork.com, where you'll see a full description on all four of our pillars. And while you're on our pillars page, just do a quick search for Your Future Self, which will take you to our landing page for this podcast, where you'll be able to grab your homework assignments and see all the great discounts that we have to offer through Credit for Caring. And be sure to subscribe to Your Future Self wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Now let's take it back to Monica.
How are you doing, Chris?
I kind of like this this role I'm playing in these podcasts now. I'm just kind of sitting back.
I'm cutting you a break today, okay?
Well, thank you.
You're my older, younger brother.
From another mother.
That's it, from another mother. So I figure I'll give you a break today. How's that?
That's that.
Well, and also, hey, Chris, I also have to say that our two guests today are two of my favorite people. And so me, I just want to take over because I want everyone to meet my friends here.
Well,
they are here with the best advice for us, and I'm just so excited that they've agreed to come on here and share their knowledge with us. It's great.
Right. And they're two of my favorite people as well. And if I was to move over to St. Petersburg, I get to see them more often. But I also want to do a plug here, because what is wrong with me today? Amanda has a very popular podcast on the Whole Care Network, The Caregiver Lawyer. And our six episodes was centered around candid conversations in care. And the podcasts are available both on Singleton Legal and the Whole Care Network. And if I twist Amanda's arm just a little bit, I think we're going to do another series here coming up in early 2021. What do you think, Amanda?
Ooh, I'm back, baby. I would love to join you for another series. I think the timing is so great.
The timing is great. And we covered six topics, and we even featured Ryan in one of our.
Yes, you did.
We featured Monica's husband as well. It's a family affair.
Yes, it is.
It was a family. That's right. And those podcasts are available on the Whole Care Network and are wherever you listen to your podcast. Just search The Caregiver Lawyer and be on the lookout for new episodes coming real soon. But Amanda, there was something earlier that that I wanted to come back to that we talked about, and that's signing of the documents. I think one of the, as I look back, you're reading on the internet, you're talking to other caregivers, you're talking to, is it appropriate for people just when they're a power of attorney to sign their name or the name of the person that they're representing with POW?
POA. So what I prefer is that a person signs their name, because then we can always track back who was the signatory to the document, but then say as agent or power of attorney for Chris McClellan. And that is my preferred way for people to do that, because you sign somebody else's name, that's a little dicey. That's a little dicey. I wouldn't advise you to do that, but just so long as you are doing it under the authority that's granted to you in this legal document, then it does create that dividing line.
Great. Once again, you get the gold medal for segues. Got to keep you around here, Amanda. You create the flow.
I'm a segue queen. I go with the flow. That's what it's all about right now, isn't it? I mean, everything right now is about going with the flow.
Everything is going with the flow.
It's true. Even though we feel like we're swimming upstream, go with the flow.
Yes, just go with that very difficult flow.
Yeah. Hey, so let's get back to the basics on what documents a caregiver needs to have. We just need to do the nuts and bolts here on what it is you need TYA with the POA or whatever we need to do. So I'll take it from here, Amanda.
Okay. So first thing that I want to say is that some of these documents, you don't even need a lawyer to do. Of course, always consult an attorney or a trusted advisor to understand and to get clarity. But there are things that you can do for yourself and you can do for your loved ones. And a lot of it just starts with having the conversation. So 90% of people say, oh, yeah, we should absolutely talk about these documents, and end of life issues. But only about 30% of people actually do. And this year, the COVID has really pushed a lot of people to start considering these issues and perhaps a little bit out of fear. But it is a positive thing in the long run to address what happens. You know, what happens if you get sick or I get sick? How do we make that? So the important documents, just in a nutshell, you're going to have your life care documents. Those are your health care advance directives. Like in Florida, we use a health care surrogate. We use a living will that expresses our end of life wishes. All the health care surrogate does here is we name a person who can talk to our doctors, receive our medical information, get us past the HIPAA privacy laws, and then your surrogate can make medical decisions for you, but only if you cannot. Okay. And then the living will is your expression of what you want to happen, what kind of care you want in the end of days. If there's no probability that you would survive, do you want life support continued or prolonged? If not, then you can put that power into your hands by signing one of those documents and basically having a voice with your providers that you wouldn't have otherwise, because you're at the end of your days. And most people cannot communicate verbally or even at all at that stage of the dying process. And it takes the burden off of other people to have to make those decisions. It's really an empowering thing to do, because you're taking the reins on the way that you're going to live up until your final breath. So those two are your medical documents. And then we've touched on the power of attorney, of course, which is all of your legal and financial affairs. It's the everything else, you know, and it's powerful. It's giving someone else the right to do things for you, up to and including accessing your bank accounts. So it's something that needs thoughtful consideration. It's something that I wouldn't absolutely recommend that you pull any old form off the internet, because, do people get in trouble when they do that? And there's a minimal cost outlay for these things. So they're so critically important. When you have them and you need them, they are like gold. And if you don't have them and you need them, sometimes it's too late and you have to go more expensive and restrictive routes, like going through the guardianship process in court. And that is never fun for anybody involved. So at a minimum, do your advance directives, durable power of attorney. And then we can talk about all of the other planning, the Medicaid planning, how to qualify for public benefits, whether you need a will or a trust, all of this, which is so much more than we have time for today. But at a minimum, I encourage people to take the reins on their medical life because it is the most important thing. It's what happens to you and your body, and who else should have a say but you.
And we do cover a lot of this, a lot of these topics more in depth in the Caregiver Lawyer podcast. And I would encourage all of our listeners to take a listen to the Caregiver Lawyer podcast as well. So Monica, I interrupted you, so I'm probably in trouble.
Well, it's all right. But fortunately, my train of thought stayed with me, so I couldn't be on the train today.
Mine left the station.
Back to what you were saying about your life care documents, Amanda. Do most hospitals now, when you're admitted, make you, I don't want to say surrender, do they make you present those documents so that they have those on record as part of the admission? Where does that stand today? I mean, I'm thinking in particular with COVID, where no one is allowed in there with you at this point. Obviously, that has to be documented somewhere ahead of time, or how's that being handled?
So I can't speak to what is happening in general in facilities since COVID and since the visitor and essential caregiver restrictions that we have going right now. Most facilities do have forms that they will put in front of a person, and maybe they get signed, maybe they don't. My standard encouragement for people is create this document. And copies are accepted. You do not need the original. You don't need to carry it around with you
in
your wallet.
It's important to know.
It is important to know. Although some people do keep them in the glove compartments of their car, which is fine. Keep a copy in your car. But my standard, my standard advice to people right now is create a healthcare surrogate, create a living will. In them, you're going to name people who can help you. If you really need help, you're going to have that surrogate named. Mm-hmm. And give them the document in an email form, in an email, just scan it and give it to them. They will have it on their smartphone and it's always with them and it's always with you. So you'll have it available so that if you do get admitted somewhere, you can say, I have this document and please at the nurse's station, could you please print it out and put this in my file? And
wow.
that's
part of your future self.
That's right.
Right. That is really clever. Take a picture, have it on your phone. We always have our phones with us. And I want to share a story on how I got my family to share their living wills. And I don't think that I'm unique in this way. Now, I live here in Florida like the rest of us. And most of my family right now is living in Ohio, including my mother, who's been widowed for a decade. And if you remember when Bohemian Rhapsody came out, that movie, the brother that's just older than me, Queen was his favorite. He always had to listen to Queen. So I decided this was my plan. As the family social worker, I'm taking as many of my brothers and my mother out to see the movie that they want to see the most. And then afterward, we're going to dinner and they don't know it, but we're going to talk about living wills.
Woo-hoo! Oh,
so after the movie is over, we do go to my mother's favorite Italian restaurant. We put all the kids, in-laws and everything else at a different table. I buy the first round of drinks. I make sure those are well digested. I buy the second round and I say, okay, here's where my living will is. Here's who's appointed. Now, Matthew, what about you? Now, David, what about you?
God.
So by the time we got to my mother, she was totally defenseless. Two drinks under the belt. Everyone else has been honest. I mean, it was like confession for a good Catholic family. It was really cool. I got all the information I wanted, enjoyed my dinner, and came back to Florida knowing that everyone has shared their documents.
Good for you.
I'm sure everybody enjoyed that dinner, Monica.
Oh, my God.
But it was effective, right?
It was effective.
Right. And sometimes you do need to be the one. You need to be the shepherd for people because, really, who wants to talk about this aside from me?
That's
because
right.
I have a death and dying degree. I love talking about this stuff. But, I didn't really.
Oh my goodness gracious, St. Ignatius.
But I didn't anticipate that the whole of my 30s would be one death after another, after another, after another. I mean, talk about having a constant guest at the dinner table. I mean, if Ryan and I aren't talking about these issues, then we're really doing something wrong. Which, hey, babe, by the way, we need to update our living wills. But but I know.
I know a real good attorney that could help you with those, too.
Yeah, it's all Petersburg. Great. Perfect. Singleton Legal, www.singletonlegal.com. but, you know, it's all very cobbler's kids have no shoes. You know, we serve.
Right.
And it's sometimes hard to serve yourself. But having the conversation is the first step. And whatever it's means you have to take to do it.
To do it. Because, and I think we'll all agree that having that difficult conversation before an emergency makes that emergency just a tad bit easier deal with. And especially when life transitions and you have this guide of what to do, it makes that experience. Okay, Monica. Just a little bit easier because you never have to second guess your decision when you know that it's been discussed.
Right.
And if I could convey, pardon me, if I could convey any message to our listeners out there about my personal experience and the people that we've talked to across the nation, have your plans in place. Have those discussions. Have Monica schedule a family dinner and she'll buy the drinks. But have those discussions because you don't want to have these discussions in the back of an ambulance.
That's right.
On the way to the hospital in a life and death situation. I can tell you, after caregiving ends, when you look back and you think about all the decisions you made, the ones that you will always feel comfortable about will be the ones that you knew that you followed the directions that were in writing from the person that was entrusted in your care.
I 100% agree. And all of this is part of the bigger point that this is taking care of yourself.
It's
taking care
of yourself.
Get your loved one to sit down and put their belief system out there to you. What do they believe? You know, sometimes our religious background informs us quite a bit about how things are going to go. Sometimes people will surprise you on their feelings on palliative care or hospice or whether they are comfortable going into a facility if you can't help them anymore, or if it's too much of a burden on you. And even just a personal story, planning their own funeral. Putting the money aside, whether it's they've done a transfer on death designation on account that's set aside for a funeral, or they say, okay, here's a little money and it's good, and this is what it's going to, purchasing a prepaid package, you know, which is a good thing to do if you're doing Medicaid planning and such.
Right.
Because if you are going through that whole caregiving experience and then you get smacked with a funeral bill on top of it, that's just one more thing in that financial piece that now the caregiving is done and you have a little bit more that you have to pay for and you may have to pay attorneys and so on and so forth. So starting the conversations just on that living will, we can include information in that. And that's, if you get someone that you love and you know you'll take care of to do that, you're taking care of yourself too.
That's an excellent point of view.
Yeah. And it certainly plays right into our future self. And I think we could probably go on for like another hour and a half, because it's so delightful. First of all, it's delightful not only reconnecting with the two of you, it reminds me of the connections that people have in caregiving, that even if you don't have the opportunity to chat with each other as much as we'd like to, we can pick up just where we left off. Because we all have that ability to and know what we're talking about and care. So, Ryan, I want to give you kind of the last word here, if that's okay.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, goodness. No pressure.
No pressure. No.
I think he's delighted to get the last word. That's so exciting.
Well, from a financial standpoint, I'll leave you with this. red flags for when it's time to talk to an attorney about, you know, if your finances are getting bad. Biggest red flag would be if a lawsuit is filed against you. That shouldn't need to come to that point. But if you are sued by a creditor or somebody that owes you money, go talk to an attorney. Don't try to deal with that yourself. And really, again, you should ideally try to see some red flags before it gets to that point. One would be, you know, if you have a significant amount of debt and you're just unable to pay it, if you find that you're unable to even make the monthly minimums, or if you aren't able to pay those monthly minimums, but your debt just isn't going anywhere, you feel like a hamster on a wheel just spinning around, then it's also probably time to talk to somebody about what you can do to help yourself and alleviate yourself with these type of debts. But that's it for me, I think, unless Amanda wants to get one final word in. I know she likes to.
I think you're perfect, and I love you having the last word.
There we go.
Oh, that's great.
How can our listeners find you in the St. Petersburg area?
Okay. The Singleton Legal Law offices are located in St. Petersburg, Florida. You can find us on the web at www.singletonlegal.com. You can email us at amanda@singletonlegal.com or ryan@singletonlegal.com. And our office phone number is 727-755-4316. Oh, and you can find us on Twitter. It's primarily a caregiving-related Twitter. But if you have any questions about consumer debt or elder law or estate planning or probate, you can reach out to us on there as well. But there is a heavy lean towards caregiver issues through that Twitter handle, which is @SingletonLegal.
And that's why you're the caregiver lawyer.
That's right.
What a delight. So, Monica, I think we made it through our third pillar.
I think this was fantastic. Amanda and Ryan, I can't thank you enough.
Thanks so much for joining us. I remind all of our listeners that Ryan's document on budget will be available on their website, Singleton Legal, as well as our landing page on your future self on the Whole Care Network.
Chris, before you go, I think they created more than just the budget for us. I think that there's some other, there are four things that everyone should do, some great advice for them that we're going to have on there. And we want everyone to take advantage and to accomplish those things. And once you do, send us a note. Just drop us a note and let us know you did it. And we'll give you a high five for protecting yourself.
And that, and you can drop us a note at WeCare, WeCare, WeCare@WholeCareNetwork.com. And you might even get a response from our new friend, Bo, because Bo ties it together.
Okay. Chris and Monica, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us on.
Thank you so much. Take care.